is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next, it's time for Indigenous People's Perspectives with Diane Hill on News for the Soul. Let's bring her on to reintroduce herself, her show, and her guest for today.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really delighted to be back on the air today with my guest today on Indigenous People's Perspectives. And my guest today is Crystal Klatt, and she's a board member at the Sarnia Lambton Native Friendship Center in Sarnia, Ontario. And I met Crystal at a board training that I was invited to do related to fostering the emergence of the good mind. So on my show, Indigenous People's Perspectives, we want to cover a lot of different viewpoints from different people on a number of different topics. But today I thought that we would focus on Crystal's experience, and she's willing to come on air and talk about her experience, which is a little bit different than what perhaps most people would think about speaking on. And it's Crystal's experience as a homemaker. And I say it's unusual to have this experience because most people, and most Indigenous people in particular, are really working hard to just make a living, to pay the bills, to get by in life. And Crystal has a unique story in that she is able to not have to worry about work. She doesn't have to go out and leave the home. She's a homemaker, stays with her children. Now she'll tell you, and we get on the air in a few minutes, she'll tell you that she does have a child who is a special needs. But that's not the reason why Chris stays home. And I think it's really going to be a great story to cover the perspective of someone else who has an interesting understanding, or started off with an interesting understanding, perhaps not what we would think, in Crystal Klatt's story. So I want to welcome today, Crystal. Are you there? Are you able to join us on the air?
Yeah, hello. Hi, how are you? I'm with you guys.
Awesome. Crystal, I wonder if you could give a little bit of your background before we get into the topic of journey to embrace your role as a homemaker. I wonder if you could give us a little background on where your Indigenous background comes from. How do you see yourself?
Okay, so I had to re-indigenize myself because my dad was a product of the 60s scoop, and I've since reached into the community and found out that I'm Potawatomi and Shawnee, and it's been a little bit of an adventure, but it's been a good one. I think everything happens for a reason, like you've taught me through our times together, so yeah, that's where I'm at. And then I work in my community with the Friendship Center, which is really great. It's rewarding. It's helped me to feel like I've stepped into my position as a female in the community even more, which I think is one of the big parts about re-indigenizing that to me, was knowing my role as a female, because my colonized view is very different than what my Indigenous view is now.
Awesome. So Crystal, when you use the word re-indigenize myself, and I'm a product of the 60s scoop, for the audience who's listening, could you just say a little bit about what happened at the 60s scoop and what your personal experience was? How did you get scooped?
So myself, it's my dad. My dad is a product of the 60s scoop. He was given up for adoption. Well, he was taken for adoption and put into a prominent white Christian family, which they were a great family. He had a good upbringing and everything. It's not everyone's story that they're that fortunate, but for him it wasn't a horrible experience. But what happened is that it really disconnected him from any of his Indigenous heritage, and he also had an adopted sister who was Indigenous, and the both of them just had to kind of learn to reconnect. And he didn't reconnect as much, so it was left for me to do on my own. 60 Scoop was just a time when they wanted to change our value system to match more of a European belief system. And, I mean, I think it still happens today. You see it in a lot of it, but that's my touching vaguely on it, because it's such an in-depth, it's very in-depth, but that vaguely that's where I would go with it.
Right. And so your father then is raised in a non-Native family, and I think I remember you telling me, or maybe it was your experience, that you were raised in it was a wealthy family, so it wasn't a poor family.
Not at all. Actually, he my grandfather ran Savage Shoes. He owned Savage Shoes. It was a baby shoe business for, like, leather shoes. So they had a really good life. And my grandmother, she would take the kids on ski trips all over the place. Like, they had a great life. They didn't – but, I mean, they were predominantly Christian. So the point was is that this very Christian-oriented, Orthodox family ended up having two Indigenous children that were brought into their home to be brought up in that sort of environment, because it was more valuable than our traditional views to them.
So the kids are being brought up with what most people would say all the basic needs, right? Food, clothing, water, shelter. But what they were missing, I think, is what you're saying, is that they were missing their Native identity. It's like learning about themselves and who they were. It sounds like that wasn't really provided for them. Is that right? Did I get that?
Yeah, that's correct. It is correct.
Okay. So you're fast forward to how does that affect you then, so that we can understand your drive and your need to re-indigenize. So your father grows up, he meets your mom. Like, what's the background there?
So my dad, unfortunately, became a victim of substance abuse, and he has a drinking problem. So, I mean, growing up in that family environment, he chose a woman that was not in his class, which...
Or culture group?
Yeah, so... and then, so... My upbringing was very, very different than what he was raised. For me, I think that's what made me, like, reach out so hard to try and find a different way of, like, living, was because what the environment that I grew up in, because he carried his own traumas and feelings and stuff like that when he found out young that he was adopted, the way he internalized it and stuff like that. And plus, yeah, clearly he was not part, like, he knew he was adopted. My upbringing pushed me to go, like, outside of my family of origin and try and find answers outside of it. And that's what connected me to looking into a different sort of spirituality. I don't think I ever really found, like, a satisfying spiritual basis for myself until I reconnected with my roots and the land and the things that were really valuable.
Yeah, and your story is really remarkable, because a lot of people would look at your life and say, well, geez, you didn't have to worry about, you know, you had rich grandparents. You didn't have to worry about money. Like, it was accessible to you. Was it not accessible, or was it accessible to you? I'm hearing that it isn't, based on how you were raised.
Yeah, so no, it was not really. So I had my grandma that would always, my grandparents were around me, but my dad chose the life that he chose. And then they were not enablers in any way. They let him do what he needed to do, and they would remove themselves from the situation. But we still engaged with them and stuff like that. But my dad would obviously anybody that is from an alcoholic home knows that we keep our family secrets, right? I think that's a reoccurring theme in our our trauma story.
Yeah.
And then the way I dealt with that is that I went out into the community and I became really successful. Like, I spent lots of years just chasing education and then doing, like, things that I thought that once my education didn't satisfy me, I decided that I wanted to do passion projects. And then I would end up going and doing schooling for, like, different things like personal fitness and, like, Reiki and all these little, like, there was a void in my life, I think. I was really struggling to kind of meet.
Right. And so when do you find your husband that you're able to some would say live a life of privilege? Because, like, what do you mean you don't have to go to work? Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey from that place of, like, being raised and with a father who's addicted and your mother, she wasn't present either, was she?
She was very much disconnected and an enabler to my father. So, she, you know, it was like, shh, and don't get him upset and do this. And so she was not very available at all.
Okay. So as you're growing up and you've gotten education, you got into these passion projects, when do you meet your husband that you have now?
So I met my husband that I have now about 5 years ago. It was after I had created a pattern of meeting people that were not very available. I mean, we all get stuck in our patterns. And they just played out in different ways.
Yeah, what do you mean not available? What would you?
Alcoholics. Like, I met other men that were alcoholics. My first husband was an alcoholic. Other people that I had short-term relationships with ended up turning out being, like substance abuse users. The pattern played out, right? And then my last relationship was the same, the substance abuse. I ended up going into recovery myself. Like, I started doing more recovery-focused work where I was like, I needed to look at myself and see how I could heal. And I just went with something that was different. I was like, you know what? Yeah. I'm like, I think I need to try something different. I've been in the hamster wheel. So I ended up meeting my husband, and we got along great. And I mean, he was a blessing. I feel like I prayed for him, and he was the answer to my prayer, really. We say that to each other all the time. I prayed for you. And it's true. I was fortunate enough that something that my husband had asked from me was that he wanted somebody that would take on a traditional role, because he had a disabled daughter who's spastic quadriplegic cerebral palsy and nonverbal and incontinent. So that pretty much means that she's in a wheelchair and she can't do much for herself, and her verbalizing and talking is very limited. She's a wonderful girl, and I really am glad that I get to play an active part in her life. And she doesn't have a mother figure. Unfortunately, she stepped out of the situation. So my husband was really clear about the fact that he needed somebody that was willing to make a commitment to his daughter, as well as make, like, with the commitment of him came his daughter. And I was more than willing to, especially because I had a little guy at the time. Like, I had a little guy later on in my life, so I thought, this is okay, I can handle this. And then I think right when around the time I had met you, I was just experiencing a little bit of resistance towards wanting to adhere to that, because for me it was really difficult thinking, like, what am I going to do now? Even though it's an ideal situation, right? Like, everybody thinks that they want to do it. I had struggled with it for a little while, and I thought, I don't know if I could do this, because I had put myself in a perspective of thinking that all of my worth was determined by what I was contributing outside of the home, you know, like I didn't, which was unfortunate. And I did come around afterwards. I'm not sure, like, a lot of your listeners probably are aware of the fact that you do your healing lodge and your sessions and stuff like that.
Some are, but not always. It's always a good time to revisit, for sure. Like what you got out of it and how you experienced the work that I do. I think it's valuable what you have to share. So
yeah.
Feel free.
So that's what changed my life, actually. So funny enough, I had gotten to that point where my son had gotten a little bit older and I was resistant to taking on this traditional role because I didn't see, I struggled with seeing the value in it. And it was really
how
unfortunate.
How was your perspective? Yeah,
well,
like what did you see? I'm a homemaker. How did you see that?
I didn't see it for being as important as it was. Like I thought it was important at the time when I wanted to be at home and take care of my little guy, but I didn't really see how much of a healing opportunity it was for my family. Like now if you were to ask me compared to then, I would have a very different perspective on it because I had believed that staying at home with my son was the practical decision. I hadn't made the decision based on the fact that I would have the opportunity to instill and he couldn't get from going to daycare or having a babysitter, right? Like it's, and then when I started to really focus on re-indigenizing myself and having like my core value system shift, right? I realize that my children aren't going to get what I need to give to them outside of what I can give them. Like it's my, I took on more of a duty role, and I realized that what they would get from me was foundational to everything else that they would do in their life. And I mean, it sounds like. They could get the same thing from going to daycare, I guess, but not to the extent that I would want. Like my little guy is biracial. He's very much, my children are very much predominantly native in features. And I just feel like he used to always say, he'd be like, who am I? And it's funny because I don't know if I even know who I was, right? But for him, because he sat in our home we have a very predominantly, like my husband's fair, I'm lighter, my little guy is darker. So he used to say, he's like, am I adopted? I'd be like, no, you're not adopted. And with that came a whole bunch of me needing to seek out answers for him, right? And then I got into it and I realized that I can't look for those answers anywhere else except for giving it to him myself, right? Like nobody else is going to give that.
Okay.
And then that's when I realized how really important this role was and that I wouldn't give it up for anything now. I mean, right before I met you, I was enrolled to go back to university because I thought I needed to spend – yeah, I thought in some way if I spent more money just going and proving myself, no matter what, I would somehow be worth more. But I mean, now since going to your healing lodge, which changed my life, I mean, it saved my soul from the hurt and the agony that I carried of this colonial perspective that my worth is outside there and not in my home. And I feel so, yeah, that's the thing that I so like moving for me now. Like I feel really connected with my spirit, the spirit of the land, you know, with my people, community, all that, because I was able to let go of it. Like coming in when I did that work with you and releasing that ego, the driving force of needing to please people outside of myself, you know, like it freed me. It really did. And then it gave me an opportunity to really embrace who I was as a woman. Like being a woman, I have such a beautiful, powerful gift and I was giving it away. I tried to be a man for so many years. Really?
Yeah, tell more about that, how you tried to live as a man. Tell more about that.
yeah, I was in competition. I was not my role, you know, like my role now as a woman is very different than what my role was a few years ago. I mean, I, even up until like when my husband said have a traditional role, I thought, oh, sure. But I still picked up male attributes of challenging and I'm not saying that women aren't to challenge. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I wasn't confident enough to embrace myself in my femaleness. I really put myself and projected myself out into the world in an aggressive way. And I think that you can still be confident and be a female without having to go out and like be overly masculine and competitive. And that's where I was at.
And thinking, maybe bound by your ego and not your heart so much.
Very much so, you know, like once I started to go for my heart space, I mean, I feel all of the women around me, my past generations, I know, I'm open to feeling them in my life, and I see them move in my life, like, and that might sound crazy to some people, I see them move, I mean, like, but I mean, like, I just feel their presence around me more, that I open myself up instead of feeling in some way that I needed to be puffed up my chest and judging myself based on what I bring to the table for a paycheck. Like I put a lot of worth in monetary, you know, like I thought, like what is the monetary value of me and not the knowledge value of me. And I realized I have a really great power to be able to heal the generations ahead by healing my children. My husband comes home, I heal my husband, you know, they go out into the world, they heal the people around them. Like, I'm amazed at the shift in my perspective because it's not at all, if you had asked me if I would have been able to adopt this sort of perspective, like, say, even a year ago, it would have been a no. But, I mean, I've worked really hard in the last little while since I've been to your lodge, like, amazing. I would have never been able to say that there's no monetary, like I don't care about the monetary worth as much anymore, at all, really. I mean, and I don't say that because I have a very cushiony, like my husband's a good provider. Like he's not a berry picker at all, not to say, but you know what, he works hard. He works really hard and really lucky. But I mean, I could very easily now, and I say this with like the utmost confidence, I could really now in any situation feel free to just be happy in what I'm contributing to my children's life, aside from what it is that I have that my husband contributes. Like, give me a different husband and a different situation and a different home, and it's not going to change the way I internalize and feel what it is that I want to passionately give to my family. And really, that's the core value of what they're going to take out into the world and create for themselves, right? Like it's not, none of it comes down to what's in my wallet when it comes to what the children are going out and doing and what it is that my husband's going out and doing. It's all about they feel heart-wise, right? Mm-hmm. From their heart.
Yeah. And that's beautifully said, Crystal, because there's a lot of people that would look at you, and as I opened up with the show today, like a lot of Native people are ending up in poverty or on welfare, and they're struggling, and they're trying to make ends meet, and so they would look at a person like you, and I think the word you used was cushy, eh? Like, oh, she's cushy position because she doesn't have to worry about money, she doesn't have to work outside the home, like she has everything she needs, and she has a nice home and a nice car. And what you're saying is that it's not the material things. It's not the money. It's not.
That is a colonial construct. You know what? I'm just about to move. So I'm just actually about to move out of this cushiony, out into the country. I realize colonial construct. I'm not against what has been created. And I'm not saying, you know, let's go back to living in teepees, I'd be very content to. But what I'm saying is this whole construct that we have going on, it's not reality. I mean, you might, I get people might say, oh, well, that's easy for you to say because you don't have to suffer. I have suffered, though. I mean, my last relationship was awful. And I did my time well, and I made the best of what I needed to. And it wasn't always horrible. I can remember times when we struggled. But I think the most important thing that I realized out of all of this is that it's living from a place in my heart where it's like, it's the happiness in the home, not the money. I can't eat money, and I know you can eat food, but we disconnect from living off of, like, I think, like, a lot of times people think, oh, I don't get to eat out a lot. Well, eating out is killing people. You know what I mean? I mean, we can grow our gardens. Yeah. We can eat healthy food. We have options. It's just what the colonial view has become of being worthwhile is, you know, in my perspective, in my opinion, it's the complete opposite. We were rich before they ever came here.
Yeah.
And then they
rich in connection, rich in intimate, heartfelt connections, rich in the human side
and
of
rich
things.
With the land. I mean, we don't even realize a lot of these plants that are around us are edible plants. I mean, like, it sounds crazy, like, and that's why I want to go, I've decided to give up city life, is because, like, a lot of these plants that, like, I just found out that maple peas are actually high in protein and they're edible. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, there's so many things that we have developed because of this colonial view on what is successful. And, I mean, your son says it the best. It's a brilliant construct. What they did, they came over here, they saw us thriving, and I'm not about to push the narrative of this prejudice. It's not my intention. But from a decolonizing view, what we had going on, our ancestors, was beautiful. We were in touch with our heart. We were in touch with the land. And, I mean, the land. Since I focused on that alone, I've come to realize there is so much potential with connecting with the land. The food that's available, like, if you started learning your plant medicines, you'd be so surprised by the amount of edible food that is around us, and we just don't even know, because it's not normal for us to look at that stuff anymore, you know? And that's the stuff that I don't, our culture is on the verge of, you know, it's been threatened. Like, our culture has been threatened. And for me now, stepping into a homemaker role, I'm excited because I'm like, you know what? I had the opportunity to get in touch with my heart through going through your teachings. And I can't wait to share it with my family, you know? Like, it's just so important.
Your beautiful, like, journey, like, to where you are now. Like, the awareness you have, well spoken, Crystal, like, you really nailed it by saying, you know, we got educated away from the simple things in life, and we started to adopt a different view, call it colonial view if you wish, but it was a view around, like, in a definition of success that just sort of undermined and made us look at ourselves as being less than and not as good as, and so we adopted those views, not realizing the wealth of what we had around us. And it's so true. Like, if you go to the reserve or you visit reservations, there's so much, like you said, food around you that we call it weeds. Like, through another view, another person's viewpoint, we would look at it as, this just weeds, and that doesn't contribute anything to my life or my value. And, you know, I want to get and earn more money, and I want to get what I see on TV or what I see other people have bring me happiness. But you're moving from the opposite end. You're moving from a place of saying, I have all of that and I need this, right? And this is more meaningful than all the material things and stuff that I could have, right? And I do have, but now I need this. What's really meaningful is I need the stuff that sustains my identity, teaches me who I am, helps me to understand, right, what the value I am and who I am. and the value in the land and the connection that me and my people had to the land. It's a beautiful journey you're on, Crystal.
I feel very blessed to have been able to, like, connect with you and let go of all that heaviness that I carried. It was heavy. It was a lot of heavy, heavy baggage, just hurt, a lot of hurt and wanting to measure up. Yeah, like it's really, that's what it all boiled down to. It was just, I had a lot of hurt that I couldn't let go of, things that I had wanted, expectations. And I had not always lived this good life. I mean, at one time I ran away from everything and I was out running around on the streets and I didn't have a good life. I mean, I've also been on the opposite end of the spectrum where I had a really hard life. I had a really rough go and I was not doing well at all. And I can see both sides of it. Like, I can see both sides. And having known both sides, I still clearly, after having had the chance to say, do I feel happy because I have all the stuff that I wanted? Well, you know what? No. You know, and it's like that one man, Robin Williams, right? He had everything. Mm-hmm. And then what happened to him? I mean, it's so sad. And I realized, everything happens for a reason. And meeting you and revitalizing that part in me that says, what is really important? Who am I? Not what is important, like what makes me feel like I'm measuring up against this guy over here with his big swollen ego. I mean, I don't really care about any of that stuff anymore. All I really want is to enjoy myself. I live from a place of accepting who I am and how I feel and enjoying the present moment and not needing to go into the future with fear and not needing to dwell in the past. Beautiful. I mean, I really hope that you continue your work, what you're doing, because I think that it's so important. It's beautiful.
Let's talk a little bit about the work and the things that I do, because, you know, I don't have a lot of people clamoring, knocking at my door, waiting to get in. And the reason for that is because the work that I do is very emotionally intense, right? It's working with the physical body to transform how you feel, to change how you feel. And so were you not afraid when I first met you and I gave the introduction and I talked about how you can use your body and you got to get out of the head and get in the body to change how you feel, that means feeling it to heal it. Like, you've got to be willing to go into that darkness. Weren't you afraid, Crystal, when you first heard that?
Yeah. Yes, I can remember going to your lodge and having to make sticky notes and put them on my mirror about vulnerability. I had to make one. I had to vulnerability is beautiful. But now I believe it. I believe it's so crazy. That was the biggest resistance. It was like I felt so resistant to it. This does not feel good. It's not. But, yes. I mean, I grew through it, right? Now I see all these opportunities as growth opportunities, and they're blessings, you know? Really, people might be like, the reason why I say it's a blessing is I would much rather be blessed with the opportunity to grow through it before it gets overbearing and it hurts too much. And that's what going to your lodge really helped me do, is that if I let things accumulate up to the point of not being able to acknowledge it and let it process and go through my body, then it becomes something very toxic and heavy and hard to carry. And now I'm very much proactive, you know, like I'm excited at what I have going forward and as an opportunity to grow through, right? And knowing that I have my ancestors and the spirits around me that are, if that sounds hokey to people, I'm sorry, but I mean, I'm more receptive to that, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm much more receptive mm-hmm. and aware, and it's a blessing. I bring my day with excitement, you know? What is today going to – there's excitement in the unknown now. It's not fear, you know, which is really, I think, a powerful tool. I mean, who would not want to have that, to shift from being anxiety-ridden? Because I was on anxiety meds, too. I'm not on them. And I don't mean to say that I'm not going to promote that, because that's not, I'm not a doctor or a physician. But for me, what happened is I don't need anxiety medication. I don't live in that place of fear anymore. I'm very much free from that feeling of fear. I'm excited about my future. I have hope in my future. And it's not because of what my outside life looks like. It's because of what my inside life looks like, which is very different.
Yeah. So you didn't run away from your feelings. Like, at some point, and because this is, your journey is really remarkable, because you've really only been to two programs, Crystal.
Yeah.
And really, when you look at two programs, which each program is a 3-day program. So, and it's this year that you actually program, I think you started, was it in January and then you came back? Or was it December
it was in
and
January.
Then March?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just this year of 2023, you came in January and then you came again in maybe April, was it?
Yeah.
Or March?
End of March, I think it was.
Yeah, end of March. So you got to do two programs almost back to back, but it's not the program, and that's what I keep telling the people. It's not how many sessions you have, but it's your willingness. It's your willingness to allow yourself to feel the pain, the emotional pain, which sometimes can develop into physical pain. Because I was trying to remember, but I think you had a very sore back. Did you not?
I was walking with a cane. I'm 43 years old, and I was. Walked where I came, like right before I had come, I was having these episodes where the stress level in my body and the not moving the energy was resulting in me like a marshmallow being stuffed in the microwave. I was immobilized. I was not able to, I'd have to walk with a cane. I was going to the chiropractor all the time. Like it was awful. It was debilitating, right? I would have serious sciatic nerve pain and then I tell everybody, I'm like, this is really important. Like just going into your body, like letting go of all that head space. And then I, like I had said to you before, it's like, it was exhausting. I lived in this place where I was in competition all the time and needing to be like something valuable side of myself, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
And now I have this adopted perspective of radical acceptance for myself. Right. Like, and I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that every day is so great and wonderful and rosy. I'm like, today I'm living in joy. It's 365 days of nonstop happiness. It's not the way it is at all. I mean, I have days where I'm like, I can't function today, and the kids are under my skin, and I'm like, but I can process it. I can stop. I can say, feel this energy, and I don't need to know why. I just feel it. And I let it go. And then the most amazing thing that I experienced at your lodge was the feeling of validation for some of the things that I had held inside for so long. Like, there's just some things that some people have that they need a safe space to go and express, and then have somebody say, listen, you know what? You're not being judged. You're heard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, how do you go through that sequencing of calming yourself down? And you've given me the tools of how to calm myself down. When I get into those hypersensitive modes where I'm maybe really hyper vigilant or hypersensitive because I'm experiencing a physical pattern because of years of living in that way, you know, the excitability.
A trigger. We would call we would call it a trigger. Something's triggered you. Yeah.
Right. I can de-escalate the situation really easily, and I don't necessarily need the outside validation as much. But if I did, I know how to approach people now. Like, I'm not as all bunged up about having to say, listen, I'm feeling really like ashamed right now. Like, I have a lot of shame for whatever reason, you know. I don't even know why. I feel ashamed. I feel like I'm not worthy. I just feel like I don't measure up to people. There's always somebody better than me. I mean, it's not doom and gloom. It's just that's the reality of it. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I still love myself. It's part of the human experience. And that was the biggest thing that you taught me, was about having the human experience, you know, in my body, though, not in my head.
Mm-hmm. Not in your head.
Right?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to experience it in my body. It is what it is. And I'm not going to run away from how I feel. I feel what it is. So I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to breathe through it. I'm going to let my body shake. I'm going to sweat. I might even cry. Maybe even
right.
I might even find myself getting nauseous, and I'm gonna have to throw up or spit up in a bag, but I'm gonna let it go.
It's a deep intimacy,
yes,
with my soul and my spirit and the connection with the earth, and that's indigenous. And that's
yes.
why I'm so happy to be at home with my children, and being a healer to my family, is because I feel like if I was out in the world doing this puffed up female masculine attitude that I had, I would come home and I'd be exhausted, and I might not be able to give that to my family, you know, because I would be triggered. I'd be hypersensitive. I'd be bearing a lot of weight. And at the end of the day, the kids don't really want the money. They
mm-hmm.
just want their parents, right? So, I mean, it's been a blessing. You've changed not only my life, and I think that's our goal, right, is to go 7 generations ahead, you know, is healing it. And you've definitely done it with one person. And that one person has other people that go.
Well, Crystal,
and then you have,
Chris, you give me too much credit. It's you. We provided the space, but you
right.
got to put credit where credit's due, right? I can't
that's
make
right.
anybody go to those dark places. So you have to say, you provided me with a space, a place where I could challenge myself and heal myself and feel the things and say the things that I never could. Buddy else. But you did the work, Crystal. So I just want you to be really clear that you did the work.
Yes, thank you. And that's such a reoccurring. I can remember you said that so often, too. It's such a reoccurring thing that comes off of your lips. And it's true. It really, truly is. And I don't think I would have actually experienced it, though, had I not had your teachings on how to be able to do it myself. And that's what I'm really grateful for. And then I get to carry it on with my children, which is truly a blessing. And and the best part that makes me feel so great about it is I carried that anxiety about how to get my little guy to feel like he could contribute to his community, right? Like being
mm-hmm.
that he's disconnected too. And he's, you know, and it's beautiful to go out there and be able to take these teachings to say, listen, you can live in connection with the land by going through your heart energy and just feeling it and processing it. You know, he could take that knowledge anywhere and he could share it, and that's going to be valuable. And he's going to say, I'm indigenous and these are my teachings.
Yes.
And that makes my heart
yes.
happy.
Wow. That's an awesome statement. That's an awesome end to our conversation today. So how many children are you raising? How many children do you have in your family, Crystal?
I have 7, but I have 3 at the house right now. So I have 2 from my first marriage, which are older adult children, and then I have since 4 children that I inherited. The 4 of them lived with us for the first little while. 2 have since moved out because they're adults. And then I have his 16-year-old daughter who is cerebral palsy, and she stays with us. She'll probably stay with us a long time, if not indefinitely. And then I have a 13-year-old and a 7-year-old. And the 7-year-old is my youngest, and he is my biological child. So, and I had him a little bit later, which he was a blessing.
So... Crystal, I can only say good things are ahead for you. And are you done healing? I don't think you're done healing. I don't think you're done coming to pay
no.
me a visit. I think.
No. You know what? My ego, a year ago would have said,
I had all the answers. And then all of a sudden I realized this is going to be a deep dive, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, if this is, it's every day, you know? And it's not tiring, it's exciting. But, you know, like I can learn something new every single day if I want to, you know? I just have to be open to what the universe is telling me, what Mother Earth wants me to know. You know, there's so much we can learn from nature, you know, like sometimes just being present in your environment. I mean, it's the birds that are flying by, it's people that you bump into. I mean, no, I'm not by a long shot. Like I said, a year ago, I might have been like, oh, well, I got it all figured out. I've read this book. I think I said that to you before, you know, you read a book and all of a sudden you think it's all, you got it all figured out. But no, and I will come back. I would come, I'll come back to your lodge multiple times in the future. If not, send my children there when they get old enough, because I just think, yeah, they'd be like, I don't want to go. Okay, you're going. No, they'll go. I'm sure they'll be very excited to go. But it's worthwhile to me. In my mind, as a mother and as a person that has really advocated for re-indigenizing myself and being focused on our community and what's important as a community, I really think that this heart medicine, vital, you know, it's the core ideology behind us as Indigenous people, the foundation of what is healing for us, you know, and I feel privileged to be able to have had that spirit come to me, this knowledge, and to free me from my prior perspectives, because it has been very freeing and very liberating.
Yeah. Yes, right. For sure. And I think your role as a board member at the Sarnia Native or Sarnia Lambton Native Friendship Center, I think your role here and your experiences, you're going to bring to that board table some really good perspectives that will just help enhance some of the programs and services you're all getting ready to launch. Hey, I know you're still in the business of developing, is it a shelter for homeless?
Correct me if I'm wrong. We're expanding on our housing, and we are revamping the building that we have. Like the location that our original building is in a prime location to examine like homeless sheltering help and stuff. So it's our ED, Donna Sutherland, is amazing. I mean, I felt her energy the moment I bumped into her. And you and Donna are very close, and then she connected us with you. You ladies are just yummy energy, and that is exactly the type of role model that I needed as an Indigenous woman in this community. And I stand behind it 100%. I think yes, of course. Of course, it's my privilege. I think if any other females could just, like, have the opportunity to be, like, mentored by you guys, like, especially you in your lodge, it just is so healing. I mean, it's such a blessing, truly. You ladies are just – you're pioneering, like, different perspectives in the community. Like, some of the things that are happening between the two of you guys working together is, like, revolutionary, like, to – our community and moving forward and really like taking a step out of a place of hurt and into a space of being able to accept where we're moving from where we had been
empowered
and being empowered. Yes.
More empowerment. I think that's what Donna herself was looking for, ways to support and empower people. And that's what I enjoyed. That's what I said, well, I might be able to help with. Donna herself, you know, has gone through programs for her own healing, her own wellness, her own empowerment. And so I think, Crystal, with you joining us, so once again, you give Donna and I far too much credit, but you got to look at what you're bringing to the board and the perspective.
Well, it all does boil down by leading by example, and you guys lead excellent examples. So, and I feel confident that you guys have shown by your excellent examples the ability for me to learn how to lead in an excellent way too. And I'm grateful for that. So that's what I'm grateful for. I do the work and lead by example in everything that I do. I don't preach anything that I don't practice. And that has been the biggest thing that has made me be able to live from a place of my heart much more easily, is because it becomes a point of passion then. And
and that passion you're bringing to the board, and so your opportunity to be a homemaker has provided you an opportunity to bring contributions to the Friendship Center. Because,
well, isn't that the law of attraction?
Yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Can you see the contributions you're making now through the board, at that level? And
100% now, yeah. Where at one time I was like, oh, well, who am I? What do I have to offer? It's like, no, everything has fallen into place very nicely for me, and I'm very grateful, and I'm blessed very much so. So, and I can't wait to go forward. I mean, like, it's just exciting, especially not needing to carry the heaviness of the stress. You know, like I get to start each day, a new day, not in yesterday, and energy's not stuck in my body.
Yeah, and when you do get stressed, you know what to do to change it, and that's what's really valuable. So Crystal, we've reached a point in our program where we call it, it's called Shameless Self-Promotion. And one of the things that I'd like to promote, and I give you thanks for this call today, because I have an upcoming program happening in Upper New York State. It's at a place called Blue Mountain Lake. It's just a few hours north of Albany, New York, and in the Adirondack Mountains. And there's a conference center there called the Middlebrook Conference Center, and part of a property that's owned by Syracuse University. So they've been supporting this project, this 3.5-day workshop, and they're calling the workshop Indigenous Healing Practices. So it'll be a time for people who are interested to come out and get their feet wet, so to speak. And what is Indigenous Healing Practice? How do I work it for myself? What is an Indigenous people's perspective on healing, and how does that affect me as